Welcome to another edition of Black Teachers Matter. Here on WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston, Boston's community radio station. I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton, the producer of Black Teachers Matter radio podcast. I'm here this evening with another special guest. I always have special guests. This is not his first time, but this is the first time we're talking about this subject, the Healthy Food Pantry Program, subtitle, Food as Medicine. We're going to talk about his journey. And first, I want to say welcome to my guest, Ed Gaskin, who's the executive director of the Greater Boston, is it the Greater Grove Hall Main Streets Program?
That's correct.
Okay. The Greater Grove Hall Main Streets Program. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you, ma'am.
And this evening, we're going to be talking about food. I thank you for coming in at the last minute. Nobody else knows that. I know that, but that's why I'm mentioning that, and I appreciate that. Before we get going, I want to acknowledge an icon in our community who passed away last week, Sarah Ann Shaw, a person. She was the first Black journalist at Westinghouse Broadcasting, or WBZ, here in Boston. A pioneer, and she passed away at 90. She knew me all my life, and she was one of the civil rights people. My father and Ellen Jackson and Sarah Ann Shaw used to talk and strategize about the Black community and putting the Black community in better situations. So where I didn't know her all her life, because she passed away at 90, and today is my birthday, and I'm 69. Yay! Okay, I get the special effects. And but she passed away at 90, and so she knew me all my life. Her daughter, Claire Shaw, and Ronnie Jackson, Veronica Jackson, Ellen Jackson's daughter, and my father, Carnell Eaton, who's actually one of the plaques that's on the Boston Common Plaza where the Embrace Martin Luther King and Coretta Scott King Embrace Memorial is. My father is there. So the three of us grew up together while our parents were plotting the empowerment and uplifting of Black people in this country. So I have to acknowledge the fact that we have lost. The African proverb says, when we lose an elder, we lose a library. And so we lost a library when we lost her. And I want to acknowledge her passing to be now one of the ancestors. But someone who is very alive here with me today is Ed Gaskin. We're going to talk about, actually, you've always been talking about food with me, not always, but for the past several years that I've known you, and food insecurity. And the moment that I knew that you were going to be my guest tonight, I was just excited because, and you and I briefly talked about what that means in this country, United States, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, not being able to feed its people. And not even when it seems as though you are no longer hungry, you may still be insecure in terms of being able to get another meal, a next meal, or good and healthy meals. So what is this program? And I have a clip that I want to show, but I want to talk to you first. What is this program, the Healthy Food Pantry Program, which you guys are well-researched, what does that mean to people, not just the people who need to be healthy, need to be able to feed themselves and their families, but also the consequences in terms of the medical industry, the medical conditions of the patients and the people. We think because we can go into a supermarket. So I'm going to read one of these statistics, which I saw in some of the research. It still kind of blew my mind. When we have people and you think, oh, I'm okay, I can go to whatever supermarket or whatever market, whatever food market, I'm okay, I'm no longer hungry. But in your statistics, currently 6 in 10 Americans have a chronic disease and 4 in 10 have 2 or more. And food is the primary and largest social determinant of health. The right type of diet has been shown to prevent, stop, or reverse chronic disease, inflammation, and diet-related symptoms. The other thing that kind of blew my mind, and in the information that you gave me, is unhealthy Shelf-stable goods are often given to those who are food insecure. So we think that if we're part of a pantry program, and the other thing, and I'll say this and then throw it to you, Ed, and this was in your background information, 50% of Boston residents receive health care at one of 22 community health centers. 50%. And Boston has more hospitals and universities per square mile than any place else in the world. So if we have the food in the supermarkets, we have all these hospitals, why are people so unhealthy? Now I'm throwing it to you.
Well, you said so much, I wouldn't even know where to begin. But I'll begin by saying thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate this opportunity to talk to your guests.
You're welcome.
Obviously, you have the sophisticated guest, so I have to, you know, play my A game today.
Please do.
So the issue, food is medicine, is obviously something that's existed for several thousand years. So whether you talk about Chinese medicine, like Indian medicine, and before there were pharmaceutical companies, the only thing that we had for people was food, herbs, and things like that. So homeopathic, naturopathic, some people now might call it lifestyle medicine. But so that's existed for obviously thousands of years. And there was obviously a move away from that type of treatment as we moved into the scientific era. So, for example, in the past, if you needed vitamin C, you just would have eaten an orange. You wouldn't have necessarily went to the drugstore and got a bottle of vitamin C vitamins. So we've migrated away from that history, and so that's had some advantages and some disadvantages. The disadvantage is that the food that you might find in a grocery store, typically research has shown between 65 and 70% of that is unhealthy. It doesn't matter even if you go to a natural products store, a grocery store, or a grocery store that sells all natural or organic products. Because if you have, let's say, a box of organic macaroni and cheese from a leading organic vendor, nutritionally, it's very likely that it's not any better, could be worse than a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese. So a lot of people are fooled because they believe that just because it's organic that it has either lower salt, lower fat, lower sugar, better nutritional value or whatever, and it really doesn't. People see that it's organic and then they go about their business. So the people that tend to focus on the nutrition, health, and wellness part, I sometimes refer to them as the Peloton crowd, meaning, you know, the people that can pay the $5,000 for a Peloton bike, for their, you know, stationary bike. They have the Lululemon clothes and all the rest of the stuff. They drive a Tesla, et cetera. And I was really interested in not just trying to reduce the incidence of diet-related disease for that group, because they were going to be fine anyway. You know, there's all different kinds of solutions for them. But it was for the population that most needed it. So if you are interested in healthcare disparities and health equity, then the Black community has a disproportionate amount of chronic disease. And so they're the ones that would actually benefit the most from any kind of food as medicine type interventions. And so I felt somewhat guilty. As you know, I have a business that I'm hoping to launch on my Sunday celebrations, where we were developing all these products. We've developed 65 products, and we might have something like a salad dressing that was rosé, wine, vinegar with strawberry puree and rose water, which would be very helpful in terms of no calories and, you know, vitamins and strawberries and things like that, but might not be as accessible to the average person. So I really was interested in how do we take what we know to be true, like you said in the intro, food is the primary social determinant of health. It's the largest social determinant of health. It's responsible for most chronic diseases. And how do we take that and make it accessible to a population that really needs it so that we can they can use diet as a way to change their state? So fortunately, I was able to create this program, and thanks to my partnership with Harvard Street Neighborhood Health Center, we will, starting May 1st, that's a tentative start date, be able to provide Harvard Street Neighborhood Health patients with food that is compatible with their medical condition.
Okay, so, wait. Slow back. And that's great. And if I had an applause track, I would play it right now. I don't. But I want to get back to some of the information here that this blew my one study. 65% of all food in a grocery store is clinically unhealthy. And another study, the Access to Nutrition Initiative, analyzed 11,000 products from top food companies and found 70% failed to meet a healthy threshold. This is if you can afford to buy the food, it's still unhealthy. And
so that is hard to get your head around unless you actually start walking the aisles. So if you go into the grocery store and you say, okay, forget the cookie cracker aisle, forget the confectionery aisle, forget, let's say, like the coffee aisle, and you just keep going, and then you realize there's like whole aisles, like the salty snacks, like mm-hmm. the snack food aisle, mm-hmm. the beverage aisle. You start saying,
I know the clear junk food.
And then you say, okay, you know, some people say, oh, well, if you just, you know, eat on the perimeter isn't any better. So that's where you find the hot dogs, the processed meats, Lunchables, all the coffee creamers. So the Bailey's coffee creamer that's in the refrigerated section and the strawberry cream cheese, none of that stuff is good. And so just because it's being refrigerated or frozen. So for example, one time,
So hold on for a second, because yes. We keep naming out all these products. I don't want to get sued. So,
I'm sorry.
So let's do a disclaimer right now. The views and opinions of what's being said here is not necessarily that of WBCA or BNN Media TV, or not necessarily me either, but these are the studies. But I just want to stay away from naming products.
I'll do better. Okay. So the point is, if you look at the outside perimeter, it's not much better because that's when you have...
Now, when you say outside perimeter, you mean
the outside of
the supermarket, wherever it is.
Yeah, so you can have the center aisle, which I've already talked about how bad it is. And then if you go the outside of the perimeter, even if it's refrigerated or frozen, and I was about to give it a frozen example. So one time I saw some frozen Brussels sprouts, and I said, okay, that's pretty innocent. It was Brussels sprouts with butter sauce. And it had some astronomically high amount of sodium, you know, 1,600 milligrams or whatever. And you're like as a human, you're only supposed to have 2,400 milligrams of sodium for the whole day. Mm. And if you have any kind of high blood pressure or anything like that, you're probably down to 1,500 milligrams per day. So a serving of something that looked like healthy, because you'd say, oh, I'm eating my vegetables, that the butter sauce that they had made, that they put on it, was so unhealthy that it would make the whole meal unhealthy. And so that's when you begin to realize that there's actually very little actual food in the grocery store, et cetera. So even, like I said, and then the product set or the merchandising that you might find in a natural food store is almost exactly the same as you'd find in any other grocery store. So that becomes a problem.
So I want to play something that I picked up. It was, you know, there was so much information. And whenever I do any of these kinds of shows, I always try to become more knowledgeable myself so that I'm not wasting time in asking certain questions and really get to the meat of it. Because, you know, an hour goes by really quickly and people are used to just flipping. You know, it's interesting. It's flipping. So if you've just tuned in, you're listening to WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. This is an edition of Black Teachers Matter, and my guest is, Ed Gaskin, the executive director of Greater Grove Hall Main Streets. And the initiative is a healthy food initiative that is going to be starting in May in partnership with the beginning of May in partnership with the Harvard Community Health Center. I want to play this clip, though, so that people can actually get a little bit of an overview. This is a little while ago, and so we're not getting paid to run this. It's just we're trying to expand your knowledge and your information. So hold on for a second.
I think sometimes when people think of hunger, they think of the images of, you know, kids you may see with distended bellies or super, super skinny. And actually, that's not really what hunger looks like in the United States for the most part. When you think of what foods are most affordable, that is a lot about processed food, right? Ramen comes up a lot, chips, other things that you can purchase for not a lot of money that does fill up your stomach and makes you feel full. And so when you look at families with difficulty in food security, you often see much higher rates of obesity because when the food is available, folks want to eat more because there's an unpredictability about the food supply. And also, when you are looking to really stretch your food dollar, sometimes it's the least healthy foods that are the most affordable.
When families are in need, a need really takes over someone's mind. And it's hard to be creative and to understand and to do that investigative work of how to access resources. Food insecurity is not knowing and having a regular schedule of when you're going to be able to access food. And that can be very stressful in a family because food is a basic necessity for anybody.
There's something morally kind of corrupt that a family has to prioritize buying unhealthy things because it's cheaper, rather than buying the healthy and nutritious foods that we know will sustain and make their families healthier.
In Minnesota last year, 1 in 11 Minnesotans didn't know where their next meal was coming from, and that included 1 in 8 Minnesota kids. The pandemic's changed that, and now it's 1 in 8 Minnesotans and 1 in 5 Minnesota kids, and those numbers are just staggering. We are lucky. We have more than enough food to go around for everyone. You know, there's some areas around the globe that face real environmental disasters like drought or true starvation. In most areas in our region, we don't face issues like that, thankfully. So our job is to make sure we help connect it with the people who need it.
It is not enough for us to just take in any food that we can and get it out to the community. We have to care about the nutritional value of the foods that we take in. So we really need to focus our efforts on those highly nutritious foods that are really difficult for low-income families to source.
Thank you so much to our PBS channel for letting us play that and know that you're not getting paid. So that was basic information. Hopefully that in a snippet that people get to see and get to hear. My guest here is Ed Gaskin, executive director to Greater Groveau Main Streets. And his, so I'm going to shamelessly plug you for all the stuff that you do, who just finished this amazing effort. It's not really totally finished, of displaying Black women lead, and 212 depictions of Black sheroes along a mile stretch in Dorchester, in Groveau, the Groveau area, which, you know, Greater Groveau Main Streets, put it together, follow me through here. And I met him before the pandemic. So I've known you for like 5 years, maybe. Is that long? Gee whiz, Ed, I don't know, man.
But that's okay.
I mean, it, probably a little bit longer than that, maybe.
Absolutely longer than that.
I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that I've watched you do amazing things, write amazing things. You've been writing articles in the Boston Business Journal. You've traveled to Israel and talked about being a Black man in the Holy Land, which three different major religions claim as being holy to them, which is, you know, it's in a war zone. It's always kind of been in a war zone. But in the middle of what is called Holy Week, between Palm Sunday and Easter, we're talking about food, and not food necessarily related to war, but there is a war that's being raised. I just came back from California, and my brothers grow. I mean, we're the descendants of Southerners who were farmers, planters. And so all of us grew up knowing how to grow food. When you taste food that you have grown, and not from GMO seeds that's been processed and everything, it tastes so much different than what is in the store. And I contend that when you've tasted the real thing, it's you know the difference. Is that true? Or have we become so programmed and so deadened that we don't even know? We think we're eating healthy fruits and we're really still not, because there's wax and pesticides and everything on the food. Is that another reason why 65% of the food that's in the grocery stores are unhealthy?
So the short answer to that is no, but the question when you said, is there a difference? There is a difference. Mm. So let me explain. You'll say you have a tomato. Now, if you were to grow a tomato in your backyard and you said you were potentially using heirloom seeds, but even if you weren't, let's say you were growing a tomato in your backyard, when you actually taste that tomato, it's going to be a tomato. If that tomato is coming from a farm, then they have no choice to pick it when it's green, like solid green.
Oh, okay.
So the reason why they need to do it when it's green is because if they do it when it's ripe, it'll be destroyed in process.
The shelf life, well, right?
No,
or there's the processing?
Because it's bouncing around in a truck.
Oh.
So because it's coming from, let's say it's coming from Southern California, it's coming from Mexico. So it's coming from that far away. So it's in a truck and it's got to get all the way up here. So bouncing around and shipping and handling, that's going to, it would bruise it. So what you do is you take a green tomato that's very hard. Somebody said it's as hard as a handball or something, right? So it's hard. So therefore it won't get damaged in shipping. When you get it to where you need it to be or somewhere along the way, you actually gas it with nitrogen oxide to make it turn red. So when you get the, and so therefore you have this firm red looking tomato that, you know, in any other situation, you wouldn't eat it, or nor would you treat it like that. So for example, you need that type of a firm tomato like that if you're going to slice it, like on a slicer. So if you were to go to some place like McDonald's, I know you don't want me to mention it, but let's say you go to a fast food place.
Yes, and let's not mention that.
and you got a hamburger and you had tomato slices on your hamburger, then it has to be able to be something that would work in a slicer. But if you had something that was in your backyard and you just picked it when it was ripe, you could probably cut it with a very small knife, and you still might even have a hard time getting even slices because it's so soft. You know, you could bite into it like an apple, but you couldn't do that if it was like this sort of hard, firm, green, gassed, red type of tomato.
So is it because of the production, the mass production of it?
It's because of all the stuff I've just mentioned, the whole process. So they're trying to get something that by the time it gets to your grocery store, remember, it has to travel. So just like bananas are picked green, and then by the time they get to the shelf, they're yellow. But they know that it has to travel, so it has to have time to, quote-unquote, ripen and turn, but not too long, because obviously if it takes too long, then it gets spoiled.
So is that one of the I'm cutting in here because I'm looking at the time here. And in a previous program, I had Sister Dora in here, and you know Sister Dora, who's doing this farming program, and they're literally training people to grow their own food, and it's local. I mean, it's, you know, Western Massachusetts, New England, so it's local. And some restaurants want to do a farm to table. So does that make the process and the food and the nutrients better if you're eating the foods that are in season at the time that you're eating them?
Well, eating them in season is absolutely going to be better because it's, again, you have to think about how far the food has to travel.
Mm.
So like nobody's growing pineapples around here or oranges or something, right? So that has to come from quite a distance to get here. So if you were able to do, let's say, a farm-to-table thing, and you have some, let's say, for instance, like blueberries are more local to the area, strawberries.
Cranberries.
So you could have those, and you could go out and pick them today and eat them today, you know, no problem. But we don't have every, we don't have, not everything that you find in the produce section can be treated that way. And because of the, because of what I just mentioned, you are going to have fruits and stuff with more nutritional value. And one of the things is, if you do pesticides or whatever, let's say you are, because you're trying to keep the insects off, or you're trying to keep the weeds out of the garden, the thing is that you actually know what pesticides you used, like if you were the grower. So pesticides, herbicides, some other things. Whereas on an industrial farm, you really have no idea what they're using.
You know, the other thing too, though, organic, while you're talking about that, organic, is there, it, talking about this processing, the shipping and the whole thing. So what does that mean? Is it truly organic when you're buying organic?
Well, first of all, there's probably about 300 different definitions of organic, different kinds of certification. So you would have to know which organic certification you were referring to. But when you're talking about fruits and vegetables, by the way, I didn't know that this was what I was going to talk about today. So good thing I know a little about this. So the problem that you have with pesticides or things like that is how the pesticide adheres to the skin of the fruit or vegetable that you're dealing with. So if you have, for instance, something like a peach, then it's a lot harder to get the pesticide out of the hair of the peach than it is if you have something like we just talked about, let's say like an apple, which is a nice smooth surface. You could probably wash that, run your hand over it or dark cloth over it, and pretty much get all the pesticide or residue off of it. Now, what people also don't realize is that the FDA, they know that when they give you an apple that has pesticide on it, that there's no way to get 100% of it off. So what they do is they have, what's the acceptable level of how much pesticide can be on that apple when a consumer eats it? And so basically, and that's determined by whether it, you know, kills the rats and mice in the experiment. So we know that you're eating a certain quantity of pesticides, which are toxic. They're just not toxic enough to kill you at once, like the little mouse or rat that they do the experiment on.
So here's, man, I didn't know I was going to go here either, because when you and I talked earlier today, we talked about this program and how innovative it is. And I started thinking, it hasn't been, I mean, I've been here for a while, but not that long, where, so the evolution of language, you know, the organic, as far as I knew, when I was growing up, everything was organic. I mean, I remember the invention of plastic, like you went into the store and they wrapped it in paper. And they wrap the food in paper, they would tell you, and first off, you talk to the baker, you talk to the butcher, you talk to the people that were cutting the meat. It wasn't in plastic, it wasn't sitting there forever and dated, because the people that you talked to, you had a relationship with the people that were selling you the food. And I also remember in Grove Hall in Dorchester, where I, you know, we lived all over the place, we could afford to, but there was a lot more green space. There were a lot of people were growing their stuff. I mean, there were people who had vines, grapevines in their yard and had chickens and had, you'd have the rag man come by and the ice man come by and the vegetable guys, and they had carts. And then you had, everybody was growing something and you would swap it. You would swap it. And so you knew where it was coming from. My grandmother, who was from Alabama, was prolific in terms of growing. So we had tomatoes and different kinds of tomatoes and cherry trees and apple trees and all this other stuff. So I already knew where stuff came from, what it looked like when it was on the vine or on a bush or in the ground. And that's not the case with young people. Is that loss of green space and that disconnect with the food production and the food source also part of the problem?
Well, it is a problem, and it's a problem in a different way, because you don't really have any knowledge. So let's say, for instance, you like guacamole, right? So you don't really know, okay, this is an avocado that probably came from the South, and how you turning an avocado into something like a guacamole. Or let's say the difference between buying a bag of potato chips and taking a potato and using a mandolin and slicing the potato to create potato chips.
Mm.
So you just know what it looks like in its finished state. You don't really know how it got there. And so you are very disconnected between the food that you're eating and how it was produced.
So let's talk about this initiative again. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston, and we are Boston's community radio station. I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton. My guest is Ed Gaskin, Executive Director of Greater Grove Hall, Main Streets, and we are talking about this great initiative that is going to be rolled out beginning of May in collaboration with the Harvard Community Health Center. And I read your story, My Food is a Medicine Journey. The program itself is interesting in terms of how you want to roll this out. And one of the other pieces of information that you gave me in this article that you're still writing is, in essence, the American food system has become a giant chronic disease delivery system. A 2018 study by the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill found that only 12% of American adults are metabolically healthy. And this means that only 1 in 8 Americans are achieving optimal metabolic health. As a nation, we are overweight, diabetic, or pre-diabetic, have heart disease, and have diet-related cancers. This does not include all of the other health problems that are directly and indirectly related to diet. And then you add on food deserts and the fact that I think one of the reports I heard was, when you're living in an urban area, there's big distances, great distances in between food, period, never mind healthy food. And even within that healthy food, there's certain food that's offered. And even within that, because of the income levels and the disparate income, you may see this food and still can't afford this food, which is one of the aspects that this program that you're talking about is trying to address. In terms of affordable food, because this is a free program, correct?
It is correct. So maybe I should just explain it.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is is that there's a high correlation between people who are food insecure and people who have chronic disease. And that's especially true in neighborhoods of color. So when you go to get food from a food pantry, more likely than not, because the same 65 to 70% of the food that's unhealthy in the grocery store is what basically is the food that goes directly to the food pantry. And more likely than not, it's probably the worst food. And so that's the food you're going to get. So my point was, why should we take people who are already vulnerable in terms of food insecurity, and they have chronic disease, and we give them more food that is only going to aggravate their chronic disease?
Just make them sicker.
So basically saying, for example, like I told you, I give somebody a can of baked beans. So that might help their food insecurity because they're hungry, but the high amounts of sodium in the canned goods aggravates their underlying blood pressure. And so I felt that we could do better than that. If we do distribute the food to the health center, we already have the patient's medical record. We know what health conditions they have. Why can't we give them food that's compatible to their condition? And so that we can actually help solve their food insecurity and help with their underlying chronic disease. And so I was also inspired because Massachusetts is a state that has what's called an 1115 waiver, which allows different kinds of health centers and things to do things and then bill Medicaid. So most food comes from the USDA. But in this particular case, what we're looking at is that we would be able to provide patients food the same way you provide somebody a prescription and then bill Medicaid for that. And therefore, we would be able to have a win-win situation and we'd increase the amount of available food for the food insecure population.
But so the parameters, the boundaries, excuse me, not trying to cut you off. I'm just trying to, you have to be Medicaid eligible and already, and Medicaid is different than Medicare.
So,
and then you also have to be connected with the Harvard Street Neighborhood Health Center or one of the other two health centers. Are those all Harvard Street neighborhood health centers in the 22 neighborhoods?
No. So what my aspiration is that we get the pilot to work and we're able to roll it out to the other 22 health centers.
Okay. And then so one of the other pieces is that, and I want to talk about this section 111. I had never heard about this waiver. Selection 1115 waiver to allocate Medicaid funds. This is a federal program?
It is.
And how long has this been in effect?
Well, Massachusetts was one of the first states to actually apply for and receive the waiver. But what I wanted to do was to take advantage of it, because in the state of Massachusetts right now, I'm only aware of two other health centers that are using it at all. And so I'm hoping that we will be the first one in the city of Boston to do it.
And then so that it's a part of an effort to improve community health, the food developed and produced through the program will be given, I'm reading from your program summary, will be given directly to residents through the Harvard Street Neighborhood Health Center. A one-on-one session with a registered dietitian nutritionist, RDN, will be offered with each box of food, as well as opportunities to participate in educational meal planning, cooking workshops, and then this follow-up and this diagnosis and stuff like that. So, and using food as a tool. So there's like a first visit, a second visit. And then how, when you roll this out in May, how are people supposed to know about this? Is it going to be rolled out in Harvard, or is it going to be, I mean, this is one of the efforts we're telling everybody, but how will every, it's sort of like the Underground Railroad. We can get you healthy. We can get you free. You just got to hear about it.
Well, I just want to take one step back. So you probably have heard about all those programs like Weight Watchers or Noom, or anyway, there's tons of weight management programs, right? And there's even all kinds of digital health, digital therapeutics. There's obesity programs. So there's lots of programs. What we're basically saying is, instead of having to join a program like that and pay money to the program, why couldn't you get those same services from your health center and have them help you, coaching, following up, accountability, etc.? Because they can actually see if you're making a meaningful difference. So, you might lose weight, but there's lots of ways to lose weight that aren't necessarily healthy. What we want to see is that you've had like a change in your A1C. So maybe you're going from diabetic to pre-diabetic again. So there's other different kinds of metrics or markers, and that's what we want to see. And so, again, I hope that was clear, that why should you have to pay for services outside of your health center when you could get those services from your health center with the goal of helping you or coaching you to improve your condition, your chronic disease condition?
So I get it. I get it, right? And here's my theory. It's not proven. I don't have the research. You're the one. You went to the Food is Medicine conference at Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition. You went to the Specialty Food Show in New York, the Natural Products Show East and West, the IFT Show in Chicago, Nutrition Show in Boston. Food is Medicine conference was at Tufts, too, hosted by Gray Green in Chicago and Washington, D.C. The White House's National Nutrition Security and Healthcare Summit in D.C., the Come to the Table conference in Worcester, the MIT speaker series and the microbiome and digital health and digital therapeutics, which you got to explain that to me. I don't really know what that is. But and then you talked about the food conferences and the federal government and the whole thing. My theory is, in a capitalist society, which we're in, you make more money off of people who are sick. I mean, you're going to put people out of business. So that's the pushback on why people, it's a no-brainer. But why people are not doing this and breaking down doors to do this? Why do you think people are still so unhealthy, even though we know this to be true, that food is medicine?
Well, there was a recent study done by Goldman Sachs that said that the new weight loss drugs that are all the rage, those companies that make them expect to make about $1 trillion from that. And that's trillion versus billion. That's real money. So it's not that the problem isn't recognized. It's which way are we going to solve the problem? Are we going to solve the problem in a way that makes pharmaceutical companies richer? Or are you going to solve the problem by basically getting more, like produce prescriptions, which have like which are a fraction of the cost of what we're talking about in terms of, you know, I think that the low end of the cost of some of the weight loss drugs are probably $1,000 a month, if not more. And so the question, like I said, the question is, how do we want to go about solving the problem? I want to go about solving the problem in a way that I think will make a difference, because if you can get people to do something as simple as to change which brand of food they buy, as opposed to changing their entire life cycle. In other words, right now, when people try different alternatives from a public health standpoint, just like trying to get people to stop smoking. So, you know, do you tax it more? Do you have a sugar tax? Or some people call those nanny taxes. And do you really try to get compliance by using some of the conventional mechanisms that were used in public health, typically the ones in use for smoking cessation? Or do you want to try to do something that's simpler, and that is just make healthier products? Mm-hmm. So what I've decided is, I said, I think the solution is just, let's just make healthier products. And if that succeeds, as you said, in a capitalist system, there will be other companies that will want to follow suit. So the same thing happened with organics and then plant-based foods, where once it looked like there was a market for organic, then more of the large food companies started producing organic products. Now, some of them, I just went, like you just read, I was in the Natural Products Expo West, one of the largest natural product shows in the world. And I saw what, I have to mention, but it's a large food company that, and one of the products that they made is a very well-known branded hot dog. And what they were demonstrating is that they were using artificial intelligence to create a plant-based hot dog so that you could go from their meat hot dog to their plant-based hot dog. Now, I can tell you that it's really missing the point, because the nutritional value of the highly processed plant-based hot dog is no better than eating the other one.
I was going to ask you that, because I've heard, you know, I mean, social media and certain social media, and I don't know how true it is, but there's rumors of using AI and 3D manufacturing, using plastic and non-food based stuff to make stuff that looks like food and selling it on the market. And so it looks like it's rice, but it's really plastic. I don't know how true that is. But it's a little scary to think that there's even a possibility of something like that, because even when it looks like and possibly could taste like what it used to taste like, it might not be healthy for you. So how can you tell if the food that you're eating is really food?
So that is a challenge. Let me explain. So, again, we talked about food as medicine, but if we were talking about as nutrition as medicine, that's much more readily acceptable. Now, let's say you had infant formula, right? It's a little powder and you add water to it. So in no way, shape, or form does that look like food, like food that you would find in a grocery store, right? It's not meat, chicken, protein. It's not soup. It's not vegetable or fruit. And so some food or some nutrition is not in the form that you would easily recognize. And so that's why I was saying that what you're saying is a little bit tricky, because it's not obvious.
Mm-hmm. So now you said also the condiments and sauces that often contain that we're used to high levels of salt, sugar, and fat, but the plant-based allergen-free alternatives with little or no salt, sugar, or fat are one-step swap. And this was the swap that you were just talking about, to improve the quality. So the participants in the program would have condiments that have little or no salt, fat, or sugar, and none of the top 9 food allergens. They would be non-GMO, kosher, and vegan, and compatible with most of the 38 most popular diets across the world, as evaluated by the U.S. News and World Report. And as a result, a person who is food insecure could stay in their prescribed or elective diet. I mean, and that would be a diet that was going along with what their RDN, their nutritionist, or their medical people who are certified, who they already have a relationship with, these community health centers, would be following them with and helping them with? Is that how that works?
Yeah. So what you've identified, one of the several things you've identified, is that people have different dietary preferences, maybe for religious beliefs. So maybe they don't eat meat, maybe they don't eat pork. So whether they're vegan or kosher or whatever. So right now, when you give somebody a box, if we were to go to most food pantries and they give you a box of food, you don't really pick what you want. You can't say, I'm sorry, I have a nut allergy, I can't take this jar of peanut butter. Or maybe I have a soy allergy, so you gave me tofu because you thought that would help with my protein, but it really isn't because I can't eat it. I have a soy allergy. Or you could have a gluten allergy. So the point is that right now with a food bank, we primarily have a one-size-fits-all approach. And the part of that is because the idea is that somebody who's at a food bank or food pantry, the idea is that beggars can't be choosers, so you get what you get. And if you can't eat it or somebody in your food has an allergen, that's just too bad. So we just said, okay, well, that doesn't make any sense because there's lots of people. In other words, there's no reason to distribute food that has an allergen or that is against somebody's dietary preference, right? So why do that?
So my other question is, and if you just tuned in, we're coming down to the last moments in WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. We're going to take a short break. And a really short break. My guest is Ed Gaskin of the Greater Boston, Greater Grove Hall Main Streets. And he has been talking about his new initiative, the Healthy Food Pantry Program, rolling out in the 1st of May. We're going to take a short break, and we will be back right after this.
Psychologist, social worker, drug expert, sex counselor, substitute parent, and friend. Now, those are some of the things teachers have to be before they even get down to teaching. Now, the more you know what it takes to be a teacher these days, the more you realize that it's one of the toughest, most important jobs in the world. So what can you do to thank your teacher? It's simple. Learn.
This newspaper's got good news and bad news. The good news is that it's loaded with jobs for accountants and lawyers and nurses and carpenters and every other kind of skilled worker. The bad news is that there isn't a single ad for a school dropout, at least nothing you'd want. The more you know how tough things are for school dropouts, the more you'll see you have no choice. You have to stay in school. Think about it.
I can't believe that some of you guys still think it's cool to drink and drive. Well, read my lips. Anybody that's going to drive me home has got to be in condition to get me there in one piece. The more you know how I feel about drinking and driving, the more you know that if you drink and drive, I'm not going anywhere with you. But if you happen to be the designated driver, well, you can take me home anytime.
Okay, we're back. And fixed some technical difficulties we had. If you just tuned in, this is Black Teachers Matter. I'm your host, Sharon Eaton Hinton, here on WBCA LP 102.9 FM. We're Boston's community radio station. My guest is Ed Gaskin, the executive director of Greater Grove Hall Main Streets, and we're talking about the Healthy Food Pantry Initiative program starting in May of 2024, along with the collaboration of the Harvard Community Health Centers. Ed, welcome back. Are you there?
I am.
Okay, great, great, great. So we've got like 10 more minutes, maybe about. No, actually don't. We've got about 5 more minutes. Oh, man. It runs out so quickly. If someone has questions about this program and wants more information, should they call you?
Yes.
And the number is?
617-460-2000. 2326.
If people need more information, 617-460-2326. And should they ask for you at Gaskin,
yes,
Executive Director?
Yes, I should.
Greater Grove Hall, Main Street. We're going to leave it at that. We'll give that number out before the rest of the program is over.
All right.
This is a radio station, and we are under certain guidelines, federal guidelines, according to the FCC, and we don't want to get taken off the air or fined. So that's what we'll do. No prices. No profanity, no calls to action, no conflicts of interest, which is why we don't mention some of those other stores that are not paying us. We're not commercial. We are a nonprofit, public interest for information for our community because we are Boston's community radio station. Anyway, some of the things that people need to know about this program, how do they qualify? Do they have to be? I've been a lab rat, a research subject in a program that there were two groups, a control group, right? And you applied for it. I forget how they found out. It might have been through my hospital and or through one of the programs. And so they offered either getting you meals for a certain amount of time that had certain kind of nutritional parameters, or you got gift cards for a specific, a grocer of your choice of a certain amount of money. That would augment the money that you got in terms of buying. So I could buy my own food with the gift cards that they gave me for that particular store. Or if I was selected, not having control over, you know, how I got selected in the control group, when they would give me my meals. And then I had to meet with someone who, blood pressure and A1Cs and all that other stuff. And then they would monitor me. And, you know, they did an initial one-on-one, and then they had periodic visits with the nurse practitioner or whatever, and I had to give them privileges, to be able to contact my PCP, my primary care physician, and the hospital and stuff. And then the gift card stopped, and then it's like a year program, but there were certain intervals where we interacted. And so I think it had the same objective to see, depending on, you know, what control group you were in, whether or not they had meals for you or you bought your own meals, what were the outcomes? Did your weight change? Did your A1C change? Did your blood pressure change? That kind of stuff. Is that the same basics of this program here?
Well, remember, it's not driven by the food is going to make, the food isn't the driver of what's going to change your health outcomes. What we believe the driver is having a relationship with a dietitian that can provide you additional support services that you may need.
Ah, and so we've got 2 minutes. Are you kidding me? We've only got 2 minutes left. So give me some of the basic takeaways that people need to, because the second, you know, the subtitle was Food is Medicine. What does that mean when at the end of the day, when people are listening to this program, what are some of the immediate changes that they can make, whether they're in this program or not? You got about 60 seconds.
All right. Just remember, you sort of like you are what you eat, right? So if you can eat whole foods, minimally processed, mostly plants, at the end of the day, you're going to be better off. And the more processed the food is that you eat, more likely than not, it's going to be lower in nutritional value, probably higher in calories, higher in salt, fat, or sugar, and it probably is going to have some impact on your health at some point into the future.
Oh, boy. Thank you so much for being here with us this evening. One last time, give out the number for more information, please.
617-460-2326 or ewgaskin, G-A-S-K-I-N, @gmail.com. Thank you so much.
So I want to thank you so much for being here with me this evening. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate you. If you've just tuned in, well, then you're too late because we're done.
Wait, we forgot to say happy birthday.
Oh, I did. Well, you know, it's a happy birthday, but we got to go. And you got to go. I want to thank you for being here with us in WBCA LP 102.9 FM in Boston. My name is Sharon Eaton Hinton. And take care of yourself and each other. God bless.